Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha Editor's Roundtable, what moved markets this week for the week ending July 9th, 2021. A relatively quiet summer week, a holiday shortened week here in the U.S. that nevertheless saw some pockets of selling and volatility, which I'm sure we will talk about at greater depth in a little bit. At the time of this recording, around noon on Friday, the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ are all holding on to gains for the week, right around about 0.2% for the three of them. Let me introduce the panel, my co-panelists here of Seeking Alpha Editors. In no particular order, I am joined by Brad Olison, the VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your host and moderator, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. So without further ado, let's pass it off to Kim to give us the big picture view of what moved markets this week.
We've had a choppy week, and it's really been the treasury market calling the tune for the stock market, as we had this big drop in longer term yields that, you know, sent the, you know, market into a bit of a tizzy on what was going on, why we're like, you know, why is suddenly the reflation trade not making sense, why are we having these big moves back down on the 10-year to around like mid-February levels at 1.25%. And, you know, there were a host of trying explanations. We're back up today about 135 on the 10-year. So that's helping stocks. And I think, you know, what we're seeing again is that if we, you know, it's going to be, it didn't look like the market was really going to end with a weekly gain yesterday. And now if it pulls it out today, it's going to be another one more evidence of that, you know, market that just wants to go up and to the right and will find a way even just a little bit.
Yeah, there were a bunch of things that hit the wire yesterday. Concerns about China, the Delta variant of this COVID, of course, which kind of put a pause in the reflation trade and the reopening trade. But this morning, it's been back on again. Travel stocks are up. Risk assets are rebounding, like you said. So who were some of the winners and losers this week, Brad?
Well, you can't get away from yields. And to your point, Nat, on the variety of reasons as to why the market did what it did, a great survey that I saw earlier this week was from Deutsche Bank's Jim Reid, who canvassed, I guess, a lot of market participants, who ascribed the weakness and part of the moves in the yields to concerns about the Delta variant, supply and demand dynamics in bonds, and the Fed pivot, among others. But what jumped out at me as indicative of the Delta variant rearing its ugly head was the fact that you had, like you mentioned, some of the travel names being some of the biggest movers, right? So Carnival Cruise, Norwegian Cruise Line, Wynn Resorts were among the biggest losers in the S&P 500. All those names are heavily geared towards the virus and the reopening story. You know, you also saw in the winners and losers some elements of the yield at play. So real estate was among the best performing sector just because they typically have high yields, dividends, while financials were among the biggest losers. They typically suffer when there's a flattening in the yield curve. But outside of those reopening and reflation and growth stories, it was an energy story this week. You saw later in the weekend, after our show last week, that OPEC, there was a lot of OPEC infighting. That sent crude higher to start the week. But just as soon as it set new highs, it started to trend down a bit lower. And so some of the biggest losers there, Marathon Oil, Valero, Occidental, and Diamondback Energy, heavily geared towards the price of oil, which itself has been on a tear recently. But, you know, I think we might get too ahead of ourselves and trying to say the sky is falling. We're well up on the year. Energy itself is the highest performing sector, up 40%. So just to take a little bit of breather here is not the worst thing in the world. And when you look back at what we were talking about last week with breadth in the S&P 500 waning, that means fewer stocks making new highs. It's not a huge surprise that maybe some market participants took some money off the table as stocks have kind of gone sideways for quite some time and put them into bonds, which, you know, will as a result kind of lessen, you know, the degree of yield that you're going to get on some of those bonds. So, you know, rushing to find a narrative, you know, growth fears, Delta variant, whatever you want to ascribe to it. Bottom line is the biggest winners kind of suffered a bit this week. And, you know, you kind of had the flip side, a little bit of mean reversion across the space, especially considering the fact that the equity risk premium is not all that attractive in the equities anymore. And like I said, the stocks were a bit overbought, and you had a lot less breadth this week and over the past couple of weeks.
Hmm. Yep. Stephen, what were you watching this week?
Yeah, as far as the modest sell-off, Kim did a really cool article one morning this week, I think Wednesday. Basically, the title of it is Why is the Market Down Today? And I couldn't help myself. I had to comment on it. I just wrote because it's been up every other single day this year, right? So what we needed a breather. We're having record highs literally, you know, every single day, every single week. It was a very modest sell-off. It lasted for, you know, you can measure it in hours. And, you know, we're kind of back to new high, or I expect we'll be back to new highs soon enough. Really interesting over the weekend is what's going on with Didi, the China ride-sharing app, which raised $4.4 billion in the middle of last week. And within hours, Beijing cracked down very hard on the company. Announced a probe, forced the removal of the app from the app stores. The stock opened down after the July 4th weekend about 25%, I believe. Pretty remarkable stuff. It's hard to believe that Didi didn't know this was coming. It's hard to believe that the underwriters, shockingly, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and Morgan Stanley didn't know this was coming. And it's hard to believe that Beijing didn't do this for maximum effect. Mike Novogratz, who's a crypto guy now, but he made his teeth as being able to read the macro tea leaves. He calls it Cold War 2.0. So, you know, that'll be a really interesting development to see going forward.
Yeah, that to me was the most interesting development of the week as well. And you have that along with news now that China's economy may be slowing and the PCOB, PBOC, sorry, the People's Bank of China. Could be the People's China of bank. It doesn't really matter. But they are, you know, now trying to boost, put some liquidity into the system and to help things. And it seems like they've been doing that for a while, for several years at least. But this, as they continue to crack down on you know, companies listing in the U.S. and all kinds of things, I think they're trying to make it more attractive to list in Hong Kong, which is still a dollar-denominated economy. But there's a lot going on that I think bears watching.
And Nate, you had a very, I think, a great tweet this week during that very modest sell-off. You said everybody thinks this is about the coronavirus, but it's really about China, or few understand this, or something to that. And I think, yeah. You know, I think that might turn out to be prescient.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I threw in the few thing there that people tend to use on Twitter, but
I threw that in for you.
If so, I should have. It was a good opportunity. But anyway.
Yeah, so the big tech names, you had Didi and also Alibaba and I think the Tencent. And so it wasn't just limited. It had ramifications across the market. So even though you had U.S. tech and growth stronger this week, it was all Chinese tech that was in the toilet.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Didi is down 30% since its IPO. But yeah, Stephen, to your point, I mean, the folks must have known about this. Now, you know, what do they care? But they got their money from doing the underwriting. But
hey, $88 million in fees, that buys a lot of Hampton's real estate.
Well, not that much nowadays, actually.
Yeah.
Especially in East Hampton. Anyway.
Well, you're running better circles than I do.
Well, yeah, I wish. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we talk about our favorite stories, Seeking Alpha articles, or other news items or other coverage or whatever that we've seen, sometimes participated in, sometimes written or edited. And let's start with Kim.
I want to look a little further into this drop that we had in yields. And as Brad mentioned, there's this Deutsche Bank survey of reasons. And among them was the worries that the growth was going to be more anemic than anticipated. There's inflation be a little more persistent. But the counterpoint to that was that, you know, at the same time that these nominal yields were dropping, credit spreads were staying the same. So it wasn't a kind of factor of seeing like a further, a growth or worries about contraction on down the line. There was another theory that this was a message to the Fed that they had screwed up in pulling the dot plots forward. And, you know, there was concern that it was going to hike too early and derail the recovery. That's the plausible. The counterpoint against that is that, you know, when the Feds faced this kind of thing to the bond market and reacted before, that stock market was also acting in tandem. Right now, the stock market's still not sending the Fed any signals that there's any problem with the recovery. And so that kind of left us a lot with the technicals, which everybody seems to like as an explanation, but nobody exactly wants to define. It's like not like it breached a certain technical level necessarily. You know, it's more of a supply and demand issue from what I understand. And that, you know, if you look back, going back around starting in April, the spread between the amount the Fed's buying in bonds and Treasury bond issuance has really narrowed, and issuance actually dipped below buying in May. And that's caused a supply kind of shortage in bonds that could have been driving the prices up and pushing yields down. And so that's one possibility.
Yeah, let me throw in another one for you. Remember in 2015 when the Fed was all set to hike and China kind of hit a bit of a rough spot and they ended up extending or postponing their rate hikes to accommodate China? They didn't say it was to accommodate China, but they said it was, I don't know what exactly they said, but they used some vague wording as they are wont to do, but everybody knew that it was because of these problems in China and to help, you know, the PBOC or whomever to borrow dollars more cheaply. Now that could be something that maybe the bond market is expecting a repeat of that. And so that is another reason why I think we should watch China. Brad, what about you?
So for me, one of the bigger stories happened to coincide with one of the biggest sets of winners on the week. So we talked about how growth names were outperforming, and what do those typically coincide with? Some of the big tech names like Amazon, Microsoft, Oracle, et cetera. So Oracle, the top performer in the S&P. Amazon is the second best performer in the S&P. And you could chalk that up to the cancellation of the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure Cloud contract, otherwise, or more finally known as the JEDI contract. You could have gone to Twitter for as many takes as you want, as many decried the fact that the Sith contract was not canceled, or that Jeff Bezos was using the Force to loosen the DoD's purse strings. This is a contract that was previously awarded to Microsoft. It was a contentious political football that was tossed back and forth in the prior administration, as Jeff Bezos is a frequent target. And there was a lot of back and forth there. But it also happened to coincide with Jeff Bezos stepping down as the CEO of Amazon. So a lot of moving
stepping
parts this week.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, not necessarily in a pejorative sense, but it was just it was fascinating coinciding of events this week in terms of him leaving the CEO post, and now the contract, it's a $10 billion contract now being up for rebid. And so you're going to have Oracle, the likes of IBM, Google, and Amazon go up against Microsoft once again to kind of get this very sought after cloud contract that should help a lot of the warfighters conduct their processes. But big political football and, the subject of years of litigation and likely even more, I'm sure, when they finally settle on the actual contractor. If not a slice to a variety of them, we won't know.
I just think it's unfortunate that the JEDI term is being used in government contracts, but that's just me. Stephen, what about you? Favorite story?
It's one that Kim wrote this morning, Big Tech and the Crosshairs. And it's not to give Kim a hard time. I found it a really cool story, and it kind of wrap up maybe in a nice, neat ball a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about on the show today. It ostensibly came as the president apparently is going to sign an executive order taking aim at some of the tech giants. But I would note that Between Lina Khan coming to the FTC, Google is apparently being sued by all these states. There's bipartisan signing on in Congress for some sort of pressure on big tech. Big tech keeps making new highs. Apple and Amazon are most notable because they've been big laggards for a few months, and they're just zooming through all this talk about a crackdown on big tech. Google's at an all-time high. Facebook's at an all-time high. Microsoft, Steve Ballmer just became worth more than $100 billion. Right. The markets are suggesting that there's nothing of the sort coming for big tech. What a real big tech crackdown looks like is what you see in China. Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, Didi, Didi just IPO'd, but all the rest of them are 52-week lows. Now, I'm not suggesting the U.S. do what China does, not at all, but that's what a crackdown looks like as far as the stock market goes. So right now, markets are you know, paying the right amount of attention, or the executives of these big tech companies, they're paying the necessary attention, but markets don't expect anything big coming out of DC.
Yeah, there was a brief sell-off this morning when CNBC broke the news about this, but it then quickly evaporated. Yeah. And to your point, Stephen, if you read through what the White House put out today, it says here, the order also encourages the leading antitrust agencies to focus enforcement efforts on problems in key markets. Like, gee, thanks. Aren't they supposed to do that anyway? Nice that they're getting encouragement. And then calls on the leading antitrust agencies to enforce the antitrust laws vigorously, which is, again, like, you know, do your job. Like, isn't that what they're supposed to be doing? Like, but so this is, it sounds to me like a lot of political stuff, maybe to the Biden administration trying to score some political points here, and that this will ultimately go nowhere. The folks in Washington know where their bread is buttered. And let's not forget that some of the biggest contributors to these political campaigns on both sides are big tech. So,
and I'll throw one other item out there, and not that I've done any sort of due diligence on this, but just because there's a crackdown doesn't mean that all the equity prices necessarily will come down, right? There's been some research that some of these big tech players would be worth more, the pieces of them themselves are probably worth more than the whole. So, you know, you could take a look at like an Amazon, which has gotten tons of different business lines that arguably could be valued, maybe potentially higher or lower, not necessarily being wrapped up into one entity. Again, not saying any one of these is one of those, but, and I'm also agreeing with this panel that Washington will likely do nothing. But just wanted to throw that other hypothesis out there that we can't, you know, I think you look at Instagram and Facebook and, you know, maybe if they spin them off, they might be worth more on their own.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't understand all that because, yeah, if Facebook has to spin off Instagram and WhatsApp, I mean, we're talking about pretty big companies there that, I mean, Instagram is huge. Maybe that's what they're worried about, but who knows?
Yeah, but as a shareholder, you're still going to get a piece of that.
Right? Yeah, right. It's not like this is going to be taken away from you and you're not getting anything.
Right.
You know, you're going to get compensated for whatever happens, whether it's shares or cash or something.
When I say crackdown, I mean something that crimps their business practices, not necessarily. Right.
Right. I was just talking about the monopolistic. I was just thinking about the monopolistic element.
Yeah, right.
But yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that some of these are worth more. SP, just like AT&T, you know, is worth more once it's broken up.
I had a favorite quote from a B of A note this morning. They talking about the China tech stocks that it had been hit, and it was thus far China has decided it's not going to let tech billionaires run the country. Sort of just letting it hang that maybe the U.S. will, but not China.
Yeah, but probably most of the authorities there have made their billions on tech as well as on other things. So, yeah, right.
Anyway. Let's not forget Jack Ma. Where is he?
Right. No, he's resurfaced.
He resurfaced and then quickly.
Probably Charlie Munger knows where he is. Right. They're buds.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay. On that note, we thank you for being with us this week. If you've been listening to the podcast, please do check out the video, which is really awesome. Our video team does a really fantastic job with this, and that airs at 4 p.m. on Friday. So it airs before the audio does anyway. And you can get it on the website seekingalpha.com/videos. And with that, we thank you for watching and listening and look forward to speaking to you again next time.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.